step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome, everyone. This is Climate Justice Y'all, and I'm your host, Abigail Franks. Marisha, our awesome co-host, is unable to join us today due to it being finals week for her, so listeners, send all the good vibes her way. I doubt she needs it, but, you know, I'm sure she's going to appreciate it. Today, we're going to be talking about energy, energy justice, and indigenous justice in regards to pipelines. This episode, we are joined by Juan Mancias, Chandra Farley, and Daniel Tate. Welcome.
First, we have Chandra Farley from the Partnership of Southern Equity, and she is one of GRIST's 50 Fixers of 2021, but I'm going to let her spew off her amazing biography real quick. How are you, Chandra?
Thanks so much, Abigail. I'm super excited to be here with some of my old friends and new friends. And yes, thank you. Super excited to be on the GRIST 50 list with people like Reverend Michael Malcolm, one of our friends. And the South was really representing this year, so I was excited to be on there with a couple other amazing Black women and women of color from Georgia. So that was awesome. And yeah, you know, I was born and raised in Gallatin, Tennessee, so true Southern girl. It's about 40 minutes north of Nashville, and have been in Atlanta about 20 years, and had a background in architecture and design, and worked in the design and building industry until the housing market crashed and my job disappeared overnight. And I am a product of ARRA, which will be interesting as we're talking about the jobs, the infrastructure jobs plan, because I had a background. My family owned a restaurant and catering business, and so I've been running events and doing things like that since I was 9, and that is actually how I got into South Face Energy Institute in 2009. They were growing thanks to some funding from the DOE through ARRA, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and I got there to do training, meetings, and events, and just kind of worked my way into doing other kinds of programs and on the facilities team because of my design background, and was just looking for ways to get back to working with the people that building shelter and serve. Always had an environmental justice background, civil rights. I was raised by my grandparents, and they remember not being able to vote. They went to segregated high school, which became my elementary school. So that's how I got to Partnership for Southern Equity to do the work that I'm proud to do today.
Man, Chandra, thank you for that. And thank you for serving the South for so long in so many different ways. I mean, it sounds like you're a jack of all trades. It's interesting that you came from a different background, like in architecture and stuff, and it turned into more sustainability and fighting for energy justice. And I can't wait to hear more about that later in the podcast. Daniel Tate, could you introduce yourself? Daniel, listeners, so you'll know, he is the executive officer of Energy Alabama and also works for the Energy and Policy Institute. But can you give us more of your bio, Daniel?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm not nearly as cool as Chandra on the GRIST 50 over here, but I tell you something I just learned about Chandra that we have in common is we're both children of ARRA. That is how I got my start in this industry, ARRA, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Think of the stimulus from the 2008-2010 timeframe. And, you know, coming out of college, I was just doing what everybody else in my area did, and that was kind of work for the federal government. I'm in Huntsville, Alabama, and big space and missile and defense ecosystem here, and something I've always loved to do around sustainability, but didn't know I could make a career out of it. And with the, you know, funding that was available for energy efficiency, got to start with a nonprofit organization here called Nexus Energy Center. And we were literally going home by home and, you know, helping make them more efficient. We were trying to save people money on their utility bills. But nonetheless, that's how I fell in love with the industry. And as I was doing that, you know, I kind of realized that people were building crappy homes faster than we could fix them. And that if we were really going to start solving these problems and actually helping people, we were going to have to turn to policy and advocacy and actually change the laws, change the regulations on the book to help real people. So that's why I co-founded Energy Alabama in 2014. And that's where I am today, trying to get Alabama on the map for energy efficiency, renewables, and electric transportation.
That's really awesome, Daniel. That's kind of crazy that y'all are both born from the ARA, like ARA section. You know, that's really interesting. And thank you for your work as well. I also want to introduce the like kick-ass part of my French, but Juan Mancias, who is also on the call. Juan, could you introduce yourself?
How are you? My name's Juan Mancias. I'm a graduate of Texas Tech University, one of the biggest racist schools in Texas. A lot of people of color will send their children there just so they can understand what racism is. I grew up in the panhandle of Texas in a little town called Plainview. I was born in Dimmitt, Texas, and Plainview is between Lubbock and Amarillo. So I'm really glad to be here. I also have two degrees, both of them from Tech, and I also have a certification or an honorary degree for pastoral counseling. But my degrees are in sociology and political science, and I've worked for the very respectful Alabama Coushatta people in Livingston, Texas. I was their tribal administrator. I worked as a contract and grant administrator and part-time tribal administrator for the Kickapoo Traditional Tribe of Texas in Eagle Pass. And I've also worked for the Scotts Valley Band of Pomo Indians in California as their tribal administrator. So I come with a deep knowledge of what tribal law is and how to deal with it. And I've also been the tribal chairman for our nation, which is the Carrizo Comecrudo Nation of Texas. And I've been in constant leadership, mostly because of our traditional council that we have. We don't have the quote unquote Howard Wheeler Act councils of the elected councils that the United States government wants. So we're always, you know, kind of having to use the back door to get into issues like the border wall and the pipelines that are happening. In Texas and along, because they're all going through our sacred sites. We just identified two more village sites in Hidalgo and in Starr County. And of course, the big one is the Garcia pasture that is in Cameron County.
Thank you, Juan. Speaking of you being on the road all the time, listeners, Juan is actually in the car as we speak. He's busy. And I can't wait to go more into detail about the work that you're doing, Juan, and also Daniel and Chandra. Y'all may be wondering why we chose three very different perspectives about an like episode of Energy. Well, we really wanted to, like, on the one hand, get the perspective of like energy justice from Chandra. We wanted to learn more about like energy policy from Daniel, and we want to learn more about how the impacts of energy and our current energy infrastructure affects communities like Juan's communities. But yeah, let's look at energy from a different angle. And we want to bring in the experts, like we mentioned earlier, Daniel Tate and Chandra Farley. Daniel and Chandra, welcome and thank y'all so much. So, okay, I know that we could easily spend like the whole day on the work and projects that y'all are doing because y'all are also extremely busy. But could y'all give like a brief summary of what y'all do and specialize in, starting with Daniel?
Sure, I'm happy to. You know, I'm with Energy Alabama, and we kind of focus on three, you know, buckets, tranches of work, if you will, really around education. And for us, that's, you know, runs the whole gamut of working in school systems and doing public events and getting out there and teaching just everyone we can about sustainable energy. There's policy and advocacy, which is a huge part of our work, and that's just everything from the state and a state level on down, you know, city council, county commissions about changing zoning ordinances or passing laws, or the Public Service Commission is up to no good and we gotta, you know, get involved there. And then a third area of work, although it's a little bit smaller for us, is technical assistance. And that's just the way I always describe it, is that if we preach the gospel about sustainable energy and folks want to make something happen and they say, let's go do it, I can't just say, oh no, well, I'm glad you believe that this is great stuff, but have fun. So we do try to help others where we can. Yes. And you know, that has historically been, you know, governmental organizations or nonprofits, and helping them actually do efficiency projects or build renewable energy projects as well. So yeah, that's pretty much the work that we do at Energy Alabama.
So let me recap. You said there's three pillars that y'all do. Y'all educate, y'all do policy advocacy, and y'all do technical issues, right?
That's right.
Dang, y'all are like better than the utility companies, in my opinion, just right off the bat.
That's kind of a low bar though, Abby.
Oh, no. Oh man, and Chandra's nodding her head too. Well, Chandra, could you tell us more about what you do briefly?
Yeah, absolutely. So at Partnership for Southern Equity, we're a movement building organization. So our work is focused on people-centered, relationship-centered strategies. So we focus on coalition building. So lots of folks have heard of our Just Energy Circle, which is our longest running racial equity coalition. We do leadership development. So we have a 7-month community education program called the Just Energy Academy, which educates community members and learns from community members on many of the things, the topics that Daniel mentioned. And we also do community organizing. So we have community organizers that work on the ground across the state and in coalition across the region with a lot of our other partners, focused on things like democratizing rural electric cooperatives, which means making sure people know they're member owners. You know, you can run for the board, you should go to your annual meeting. So just really getting people engaged in the full spectrum of the energy planning and decision-making process. And those strategies, though, work across all of our issue areas. So Partnership for Southern Equity, we focus on 4 different issue areas. Energy and climate is one. Under Just Energy, equitable development, land use is Just Growth. Economic inclusion is Just Opportunity, and health equity, which is really self-explanatory with Just Health. So, and all of those work together. I always say to folks, PSE's logo is a circle for a reason, because those are all definitely interconnected.
Oh, I love that. I mean, that's a good point too. And it seems like both you and Daniel have very similar, well, not similar, I guess, like strategies of how y'all are tackling these energy inequities and energy injustices across the South. Through education, through advocacy, and all that stuff. So thank you so much for that. And I about say, neither Chandra nor Daniel listeners give themselves enough credit for the amazing work that they're doing. I just can't stop bragging on them a little bit. But yeah, so speaking of like energy and stuff, and I want to make sure that all of the listeners are on the same page, because, you know, a lot of people are learning about this stuff, and I didn't know anything about energy until like a year or two ago. So could y'all tell something, like, could you tell us something about energy and how it affects people on a daily, like, basis? Because I know the South has a very unique reality in comparison to the rest of the country, if y'all could talk about that.
Well, I'm happy to start. I mean, just, we can't do anything without it. So energy is like air and water. You know, breathing is automatic. We don't think about it, but you can best be sure if it's dirty, if it's making you sick, you're going to notice it. We can't live without water, but if it tastes bad or if it smells funky, as is often the case when, you know, communities are dealing with environmental justices, you're going to notice. And I feel like it's, from my perspective, it's the same with energy and utilities. Nobody's thinking about their utility bill unless they can't pay it, right? Or unless it's super high. And but it's something that, you know, that has been around. Well, obviously it's been around forever in different forms, but I think the talking about energy from the utility bill perspective is where is our jumping off point, if you will, talking about making sure people understand that there are people who are sometimes elected, other times appointed by someone who is elected, who are making the decisions about where that energy comes from, how much you're going to pay for it. So making the energy conversation, you know, a lot of people say, oh, we have to make this a kitchen table issue. And yeah, that's right. But we don't have to make it a kitchen table issue. It is a kitchen table issue. You can best believe we are all, somebody is sitting around their kitchen table talking about, damn, that energy bill is, why is our light bill so high? Or I'm scared about losing my job because I got to take my kid to the emergency room who just had an asthma attack. So they're talking about these things around the kitchen table. They're just not talking about it like we talk about it, you know, like we might be talking about in this conversation. So how do we, and sometimes I consider myself like a translator, right? You know, how do we take this information and making sure that it's in the same language and common speak that people talk about every day, which is why we have organizers, which was why we have things like the Just Energy Academy, you know, just speaking the same language, you know, as a mechanism to get people engaged in something that is dictates almost every component of our lives, which is energy.
And you, I mean, you bring up that point about the light bill. That's what my mom and my Nana and Poppy describe it. You know, you close the door, you don't let the air out, stuff like that. And even with Southern communities trying to become energy efficient, try to save money on their bills, we still have the highest rates of electricity bills. And we also have the highest rates of like energy usage and inequity. And, you know, there's a reason for it. It's a systemic issue. And you bring up a lot of really good points. Thank you, Chandra. Daniel, do you want to chime in?
Yeah, just that, you know, everything Chandra said is exactly right. I mean, you're looking at a system that, you know, at the end of the day, when people are faced with normal kitchen table issues outside of energy, you think about, oh, well, this bill is too high, I'm going to switch cell phone providers, or I'm going to go see if I can find a way to make some extra cash, or I'm going to shop at this store. So this one, trying to say, you don't have a choice, right, when it comes to your energy provider. And, you know, she's exactly right that these things are regulated by people that you vote for. In many cases in the state, like I work in Alabama, these are elected positions, the Public Service Commission, about who decides how much you have to pay. And, you know, it is in all sense of the word, but even more so than just like what we think of fossil fuel extraction, this is an extractive relationship just from a political and an economic sense, right? We have monopoly utility companies that exist to do basically nothing but extract from the people. Now, they, you know, we obviously need energy, like Chandra said, but we have this system right now that is working in an extractive manner, and giving the absolute bare minimum back to the system while it kind of extracts for those shareholder profits and all the things that go to help people outside the region and really hurts us. And so the last thing I'll say about this particular issue that a lot of people don't know is that, you know, there's a lot of things that you're actually paying for when you pay your utility bill beyond actually paying for the kilowatt hours or the cubic feet of gas, right? You know, utility companies can take that, some of that money, and in many cases do, and they spend it on some pretty nasty politics, or they spend it on some pretty nasty litigation to block Clean Air Act revisions or Clean Water Act revisions that are meant to address some of the very things that Chandra was talking about. So they, because you have no choice, are kind of forcing you into this political speech that is against your own interest, and you have no choice but to pay for that. So when people are sitting around the kitchen table wondering how they're going to pay these bills, it's, you know, often infuriating for someone like me to think, you know, that they even have to have that conversation in the first place. But then second, you know, some of that money is then going to turn around and be used against them in the future.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like you said before, it's extremely extractive. Our current energy system is extractive of people's money. It's extractive of resources, and it's extractive and damaging to communities, especially frontline communities. So why? Okay, this is like a huge, that's a huge question. I was about to be like, so why is this an issue? But good Lord, we could talk about that for a while. But like, why are we facing such high energy burdens and energy corruption here in the South? I mean, like you mentioned earlier, Daniel, we have this like dirty money going into politics, or as Juan was mentioning earlier, these pipelines that are going through communities, or Chandra talking about how it's polluting and giving kids asthma, you know, like why are we facing these issues in the South specifically? Because I think it's more of an issue here than it is in other parts of the country. Would y'all like agree? Because I'm still kind of learning as well.
Yeah, I can take a stab at this first if you'd like. I mean, let me just preface this by saying this is an issue everywhere. So the South is not alone in the fact that there are utility companies that are taking advantage of communities. You can find them in every state in the union, right? You can find terrible examples of this, unfortunately. I do agree with you, though, that if you just look at what I would consider just sheer magnitude, it's a whole order of magnitude worse, I think, in the South. And there are some underlying issues for that go beyond energy. I think that, we have a long history of systemic poverty. We have a long history of systemic racism. We have just so many issues in the South that we've been dealing with for a very long time that you're kind of layering this on top of. And so everything is making everything else worse. So I don't think, again, it's not indicative of the South, but you can definitely see that we have, extremely high energy burdens, more so than most other areas of the country. We have some of the highest energy poverty, some of the highest pollution burdens. And I think that all of these things are contributing factors making it worse.
Yeah, Daniel said it all. I mean, just the legacy of slavery in the South. We can start with that. Talk about extreme extraction for energy. Well, who was the first energy, of enslaved people in this country? So the South is a region that for all of those reasons has just been like laid bare, right? By racial, economic, class, legacy of slavery. All of these societal barriers have hampered, the opportunity for Black communities or rural communities to be in this place where 84% of persistent poverty counties are in the South. A persistent poverty county is a county that experiences poverty for 3 decades or more, 30 years. And look back at what was happening 30 years ago, right? We can talk about the Southern strategy. We can talk about Jim Crow. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of these things are, we can tie everything to redlining, right? Even energy insecurity. Why? The housing stock. Well, why? Well, it's hot down here, right? So we need more air. We need all of these things. We usually are right neck and neck with the Midwest around experiencing a higher frequency of climate disaster and weather disaster events. I think Georgia itself has had like $20 billion of damage from these events, like over the last 10 years or so. And so all of these things on top of, like Daniel said, well, we rank at the top for energy burdens and we rank at the bottom, like literally there are 5 Southern states who rank at the bottom of list for utility energy efficiency programs, weatherization effectiveness, all of the things that are supposed to not just help reduce bills, but can serve as economic development opportunities, high road job creators, community wealth building opportunities are all lagging behind. And then you pile on the fact that, COVID and, it's a mess. but on top of that, there's a lot of opportunity and we know what to do, right? All of us talking about ARA earlier, there are solutions. The political will here is the political will, the oppressive corporate monopoly structure of investor-owned utilities, like Daniel said, pouring their money into behind the scenes into things that they're saying on the front end that they care and support, it's the tangled web.
Yeah, and I'll just add one small point because Chandra really highlighted it well. And that is, because we have these issues, you know, at a higher magnitude than most other areas of the country, all of the other areas of the country, that is all the more reason why we need strong regulation from our public service commissioners, why we need actual companies or even in many cases, public utilities that aren't doing the right thing to be investing heavily in these solutions for our communities. Again, not just because it's an energy thing or a climate thing, but because this is gonna radically affect in a positive way the pocketbooks and the economic position of millions of Americans who have been left behind decade after decade after decade. And the South needs the investment. We have an entire agency of the federal government, the Appalachian Regional Commission, that does nothing but try to, like, you know, address systemic poverty in Appalachia. And then there's, you know, other federal agencies that do the same in different other areas of the South. They, you know, this is, again, it's a systemic issue. It's been going on for decades, and we really got to step it up.
Yeah, we got to take care of each other, and our government needs to take care of us, you know? But thank y'all for that. And I really wanted to close off with something positive, you know? I mean, we have all this doom and gloom of, oh Lord, the South, we got a lot of issues. And, you know, there's a lot that needs to be fixed, but what do we have to hope for when it comes to energy in the South? Like, you know, Chandra, you mentioned earlier that we have the solutions, we just have to implement them. Can y'all talk, like, just close us off that way?
Yeah, I mean, there is a wealth of opportunity here. You know, I mean, all of these tried and true strategies, just basics, weatherization, energy efficiency. I mean, these are things that work. We know solar works, but when we get into that kind of stuff, we get into the things that, like Daniel is talking about, where we have such so many rigid regulatory barriers, because utilities know what is happening. That is why they're keeping their claws on these, because, you know, yes, it's going to affect their bottom line, but that is what transition is about, right? So I am hopeful that we know what to do. Strategies exist, and we're in a movement moment right now where, I mean, look at us on, you know, on this call, like everything that has been happening. Elections matter. We would not be having this conversation had January 5th, not even November, but you're welcome from Georgia,
yes,
January 5th went
Georgia
a different way, right? So it's an incredible moment to finally make sure the investment is meeting the opportunity. And so that is what I am hopeful about. My two words for this year have been money and implementation. Like, you know, I'm tired of talking, like, write some checks. Let's, you know, set up, let's get the money out the door to the communities and to the agencies that we know need it pull the lever to start churning these things out, which also helps us build political will for some of the things people still kind of really don't. Well, what do we do about solar? I don't really know a lot about that. I don't really know a lot about the Public Service Commission. When you can demonstrate to someone what something means tangibly, something they can touch, it excites people. It gets them excited. They want to talk about it. They want to tell their neighbor about it. They want to tell their church or work, you know, so you just keep building this movement. So that's what I'm really excited about right now. I think we're really in a really unique moment where we have the opportunity to shift these systemic inequities into that regenerative, forward-thinking future that all of us are working towards.
I'll just say that, you know, everything Chandra said, plus the fact that the South has got the best folks. I mean, no offense here to my friends that are from the Northeast or from out West, but I mean, we got the best folks. We're going to make it happen.
That's right.
The South
That's
is
right.
A bunch of resilient folks, you know, and I think we can make this happen. And I don't know of anybody else than a bunch of Southern folks basically just saying, well, damn it, I'm just going to do it myself. And that's what I think you see this call and so many people around the South just saying, enough's enough. And, you know, we're just going to go make it happen. And, you know, that's going to mean that some of the powerful interests aren't necessarily going to like what we have to say or what we are able to accomplish. But, you know, I think we got enough great people around the South that are just they're sick, they're fed up, and they're ready to make it happen.
Yeah. In summary, you know, like, put your money where your mouth is. you know? Take care of each other and repair past harms, because there's been generations of it. And the South has something to say, period. In summary. Well, thank y'all so much. And next episode, we will be talking about labor through a Southern lens. Thank y'all.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Climate Justice Y'all podcast. My name is Michael Hansen, and I'm the executive director of a small nonprofit organization called GASP in Birmingham, Alabama. We're one of the four organizations who came together to produce this podcast. The other groups are the Southeast Climate and Energy Network, the Gulf Coast Center for Law and Policy, and the People's Justice Council. We're centering the stories of the people and places on the front lines of the climate crisis and environmental justice movements in the South. We'll be talking about air, energy, land, labor, democracy, and all kinds of other issues affecting Southern communities. Funding for this podcast was provided in part by the U.S. Climate Action Network. If you'd like to see this work continue, please consider making a donation on our website. If your organization or company would like to sponsor an episode, please get in touch with us by emailing me at michael@gaspgroup.org. That's Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, @gaspgroup.org. Thanks again for listening and being a part of this story.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.